Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Melissa Topshur with today's headlines. The trial begins for 27 suspects connected to the Panama Papers scandal.
A European court rules Swiss climate inaction violated the rights of citizens.
Joe Biden announces further student debt relief plans.
And the president gives $6.6 billion to a Taiwanese computer chip company.
David Cameron meets Donald Trump in Florida.
Tesla settles a lawsuit over a fatal autopilot crash.
An RFK Jr. staffer reportedly claims her top goal is to get rid of Biden.
Mortar fire kills three Tanzanian soldiers in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Japanese firms warn AI could lead to a collapse in social order.
And Mattel introduces a new, more inclusive version of Scrabble.
In our first story, the Panama Papers trial begins for 27 defendants. Here are the facts as agreed upon by DW, Fox News, Newsroom Panama, The Guardian, and CNN. Roughly 8 years after the Panama Papers were revealed, 27 people connected to the scandal are on trial for money laundering and tax evasion charges in a Panamanian court. At the center of the 11-million-page financial document dump scandal was the Mossack Fonseca law firm, whose owners, Jürgen Mossack and Ramon Fonseca, are accused of setting up shell companies to help some of the world's richest people hide their money. The two men were acquitted on similar charges, including money laundering and making offshore bank accounts to move bribe money from the Brazilian construction company Odebrecht in a 2022 Panama trial. The other defendants are employees who worked for the law firm. Panama changed its definition of money laundering in 2019, and Panama's Supreme Court previously ruled that shell companies couldn't be ruled criminal if they were created before the law changed. The document leak, however, went beyond just Mossack and Fonseca, connecting over 100 politicians, then heads of state, billionaires, and sports stars to tax evasion in places such as Panama and the British Virgin Islands. Among those exposed were cellist Sergei Roldagin, a friend of Russian leader Vladimir Putin, who was keeping $2 billion in an offshore company, and former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif of Pakistan, and Sigmundur Davíð Gunnlaugsson of Iceland.
Okay, thanks for those facts. Melissa, we have a narrative A on this from the Associated Press. The system is working well when a phenomenal piece of journalism leads the authorities to scrutinize the wrongdoings of the elites. Tax evasion hurts smaller countries as well as the biggest. So hopefully this trial provides justice for taxpayers and holds accountable those who work to help wealthy individuals avoid paying taxes.
And here's narrative B from World Socialist website. The Panama Papers probe and investigations like it do a great job of holding some wrongdoers accountable. But there is wider spread systemic corruption than these U.S. State Department-funded reports are showing. Those who are friendly with the U.S. should face the same justice as those who oppose American influence worldwide.
And from time to time, we have statistics-based nerd narratives brought to us by our friends at the Metaculous Prediction Community. This one says there's a 50% chance that the world will create the first trillionaire by May of 2032.
That's a lot of scandals.
If I was rich like these guys, I would pay all my taxes because the last thing I need if I'm super rich, what I don't need is an extra billion, but what I do need is not to have a bunch of hassle.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I think it's also time you stop pretending you're not a billionaire, Scott.
Oh, luckily I'm in the I'm between page 7 and 8 million of this 11 million page thing, so no one's
that's
gonna,
right where you want to be.
That's right, not the end, not the
you
beginning.
Can
neither
be
primacy
over.
Nor recency bias will reveal me. A court claims Switzerland's climate inaction violated human rights. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Euronews, CNN, The Guardian, BBC News, and Politico. The European Court of Human Rights on Tuesday found that Switzerland violated the human rights of its citizens when its climate change policies failed to protect them from climate impacts. The court, which rejects an average 90% of the cases received, expedited its review of three climate-based cases, including the case against Switzerland because of its cascading impact on three other courts, examining government climate policy. This case was brought by a group of 2,400 elderly women who argued that the failed policies have made an already vulnerable population more vulnerable to climate change impacts, including heat waves. The landmark ruling is legally binding, has no option for appeal, and sets the stage for other climate-based lawsuits across Europe. It could also force Switzerland to reduce its use of fossil fuels. The court threw out a different case brought against France by the former mayor of Grand Synthe, who alleged that the policies of the government increased the risk the coastal town faced from sea level rise. It was rejected as the former mayor is no longer a French resident. The court also dismissed a case against Portugal and 31 other European governments brought by Portuguese youth. They alleged that weather-related disasters increased their climate anxiety and reduced their ability to participate in outdoor activities and attend school.
Thank you, Scott, for those facts. We have many narratives here, starting with a narrative A from Reuters. Switzerland has been and will remain committed to its net zero target. This landmark ruling does not change the level of devotion granted to slashing emissions. While this ruling doesn't make much sense with respect to Switzerland, the government will take time to review its recommendations and determine how to shape future actions.
And this clash of spins continues with narrative B from The Independent. While some cases were thrown out, the success of the Swiss women's case was a win for Switzerland, Europe, and beyond. Their case proves that governments have a responsibility to protect the physical and mental health of their people, and to not do so is a clear violation of human rights. This is a pivotal moment for the sustainability of humanity's future.
And here's narrative C from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Climate and environmental disasters have been predicted by modern-day doomsdayers for decades. None of the apocalyptic predictions have come true so far. It's irresponsible to codify public policy consequences when the climate debate is still unsettled.
And a nerd narrative from Attaculous, there's an 82% chance that the EU will rank above the US and China on the Climate Change Performance Index every year until 2030. I love the civilization computer games. You choose a civilization, you take them through history and learn technologies, wage war, diplomacy, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I read a X post today that someone was saying that as that series has gone on, so Civilization 6 is out right now, and Civilization 1 came out in like 1989 or something. And the game has gotten increasingly complex, but it's basically the same thing, but just more complex each time. Their theory was that the game has gotten more, I guess, I don't know, woke or progressive or whatever in its politics, because now the current games include things like climate change. Basically, in the old game, you won by conquering the world. That was basically your only choice. Now you can conquer the world militarily. You can conquer the world with your culture. You can environmentally win. There's all these different things. And there's, you know, if you build too many factories, there's going to be climate change.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these different features. And I didn't think about it that way, but there is, if someone was a climate change skeptic, then that would be startling to see that in the game you're playing.
Yeah. Well, and it's a, you know, you have to think about, okay, well, this is just a game. How close to reality are they getting it in this game? Is there actually going to be a waterfall, that chain of events that causes the world to explode, or, you know, metaphorically speaking?
I guess we'll find out.
Okay, so which version are you on?
I play Civilization 6, but I'm a pacifist. I usually try to avoid, kind of like in real life, I'm avoidant. I try to avoid conflict, kind of get mine where I can, and before you know it, I won, but no one realized it until it's already over. That's my plan.
Right. Okay, so you're not using it as an opportunity to explore outside of your own existence.
Oh no, say, I'm looking deep inside myself. Yeah, deep inside.
Biden announces further student debt relief plans. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ABC News, NBC, the White House, CNN, and CNBC. President Joe Biden announced a new student debt forgiveness plan on Monday during a campaign visit to Wisconsin, building on his previous policies to cancel the debt of millions of borrowers. He said the new relief, which comes after the Supreme Court struck down his initial plan to cancel up to $20,000 for roughly 43 million eligible debtors, could be life-changing for hardworking Americans. If implemented, the plan, combined with previous actions, would provide student debt relief to over 30 million citizens. The Biden administration has already approved $146 billion in relief through dozens of executive orders. The new proposals could provide relief for people with larger balances than their initial principals due to interest, those who haven't enrolled in existing student loan forgiveness programs, and those who have been in repayment for 20 years or more. Some 25 million borrowers stand to benefit from the new program, which aims to cancel up to $20,000 in accrued interest per individual. According to the Biden administration, 23 million of these borrowers will have their entire balance growth forgiven. The proposals must undergo a public comment period before the Department of Education can publish a final version of the plans. Such relief could take effect by July 1, 2025.
Washington Post brings us the Democratic narrative spin on this story. Joe Biden is committed to helping millions of Americans crushed by student loan debt and will not sit on his hands while people struggle. Though the right-wing Supreme Court struck down Biden's initial proposal to provide sweeping relief, it didn't rule that Biden was prohibited from passing smaller relief packages. The GOP has no interest in helping millions of young people who are simply looking to get ahead by receiving an education. Still, Biden and the Democrats will do everything possible to provide desperately needed aid to those Americans.
And here's the Republican narrative from Fox News. Last year, the Supreme Court rightfully struck down Biden's unconstitutional proposal to cancel billions of dollars of student debt. Yet the president kept trying to circumvent the ruling. Everyone knows that debt doesn't simply disappear, meaning that Biden is asking the American taxpayers to foot a nearly $500 billion bill to pay for other people's college degrees. From ignoring the Constitution to stealing from taxpayers, Biden and the Democrats are showing a clear disregard for American citizens.
And another nerd narrative from Attaculous, there's a 50% chance that the U.S. student loan debt bubble will pop by 2038. Biden gives $6.6 billion to a Taiwanese company for U.S. chip production. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Silicon Semiconductor, Daily Caller, Silicon Republic, Financial Times, and Al Jazeera. Aiming to encourage U.S.-based production of advanced chips, the Biden administration announced on Monday that it has pledged to give Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, up to $6.6 billion to expand its facility in Arizona. In addition to the $6.6 billion grant, the U.S. is also giving $5 billion in loans to help the chipmaker expand production from 2 to 3 facilities in Phoenix, Arizona, which will create more than 25,000 direct construction and manufacturing jobs. Biden signed the CHIPS and Science Act in 2022 to revive the U.S. semiconductor sector by granting major subsidies to attract private investment. This transaction promises to boost cutting-edge sectors like artificial intelligence. According to the deal, TSMC will start making its most sophisticated semiconductors in Arizona by 2028, including 2-nanometer chips, or even more advanced technologies in the third facility, which is planned to open by 2020. The U.S. Department of Commerce said it was necessary to give this subsidy because both TSMC and Intel chipmakers have experienced funding and market difficulties, which had delayed their plans to construct chip fabrication plants. Dr. Mark Liu, TSMC chairman, said that the new U.S. funding enabled TSMC to expand its investment in the Arizona project. This makes it Arizona's greatest foreign direct investment and the United States' largest greenfield investment, i.e. a project with no prior work constraints.
Thank you, Scott, for those facts. Here's the pro-establishment narrative from The Guardian. President Biden is following through on his promise to ensure that the U.S. has access to cutting-edge chip manufacturing on U.S. soil, a major national security priority. By supporting TSMC's project and providing nearly $20 billion in grants and loans to help the U.S. manufacturer Intel reclaim its position as a chip-making leader, the U.S. will be a world leader in advanced technology. It will also create thousands of qualified jobs in Arizona.
TechCrunch brings us the establishment critical narrative. While the White House may celebrate giving $6.6 billion to TSMC as a major investment into U.S. chip-making, the real story is how the announcement will contribute to escalating tensions with China. Chip manufacturing and Taiwan are at the heart of a soft conflict between Washington and Beijing and Biden giving billions to a Taiwanese chip giant surely won't sit well. Deepening ties with TSMC will only add fuel to the fire.
And here's the nerd narrative from the Metaculous Prediction Community, saying there's a 3% chance that there will be an emergency shutdown at a Taiwan semiconductor facility before January 1st, 2025. The UK's Cameron meets Trump in Florida ahead of Blinken's visit. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Telegraph, The Washington Post, The New York Post, The Guardian, and gov.uk. British Foreign Minister Lord David Cameron traveled to the Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida and met with former U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday. The two reportedly discussed Ukraine, NATO, and the conflict in the Middle East. The visit came as insiders from Trump's re-election campaign spoke to reporters from The Washington Post, outlining that Trump has envisioned bringing an end to the Ukraine war by pushing Ukraine to cede Crimea, under Russian control since 2014, as well as the border Donbas region. However, shortly after its publication, Trump advisor Jason Miller told the New York Post, quote, "The whole thing is fake news from the Washington Post. They're just making it up." Meanwhile, Britain's Cameron, himself a former leader, reportedly took to visiting Trump with the aim of trying to convince him of backing the Ukraine spending bill currently stalled in Congress. Cameron is set on Tuesday to visit U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, and Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader. According to a U.K. Foreign Office statement on the trip, Cameron will go with a message that success for Ukraine is vital, and that should Russia win the war, it would be a threat to American and European security.
Narrative A comes from gov.uk. This visit from the UK's David Cameron to the US reaffirms both countries' long-term commitment to supporting Ukraine. Ukraine's success in this conflict is vital for American and European security. Russia cannot be allowed to succeed, as it would only serve to embolden more land grabs from other autocratic countries.
And here's narrative B from the First Post. It's tricky to see how Cameron could effectively enact any level of diplomacy with the U.S. over Ukraine if the U.K. wants an all-out victory for the nation. Trump has only just expressed his support for a rapid peace plan involving Kyiv surrendering territory to Moscow. Many Americans have grown skeptical to the amount of taxpayer money being sunk into this conflict and care more about a practical conclusion than proving a point on the world stage.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculous, there's a 5% chance there will be a bilateral ceasefire or peace agreement in the Russo-Ukraine conflict in 2024. Tesla settles its autopilot crash lawsuit. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by the Times of London, The Guardian, Al Jazeera, The Telegraph, and BBC News. Elon Musk-owned Tesla has settled a lawsuit with the family of Walter Huang, an Apple engineer killed in 2018 in a crash involving a Model X on autopilot. Details of the deal are unknown. Huang was using the driver assistance system when he crashed into a divider in California, placing Tesla's autopilot and full self-driving tech under a lens. In 2019, Huang's family sued Tesla for negligence and wrongful death, alleging it misled customers into believing they could drive without remaining alert. The case was scheduled to be tried this week. Tesla, however, argued Huang was playing a video game before the accident, and his failure to remain vigilant and assume control contributed to the crash. Tesla's self-driving software faces scrutiny in the U.S. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has said autopilot could lull drivers into complacency. Tesla faces many lawsuits over crashes linked to its driver assist technology. This latest settlement comes amid declining sales and a plan to reveal a self-driving robotaxi.
Thanks for those facts. Forbes brings us narrative A. Tesla is upfront with its customers that their full focus is an absolute requirement while driving its cars on autopilot. The company informs them of the need to be ready to take control at any moment, so you can't blame the company or its technology if the driver fails to follow these instructions.
And narrative B comes from the Washington Post. Tesla needs to be held responsible for the misconception surrounding its autopilot feature. Misunderstanding, partly attributed to misleading labeling like full self-driving, is a key reason for the series of crashes involving its cars. Clearer names could aid comprehension and be crucial for users to grasp the technology's limits.
And here's the nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 50% chance that a DUI will be overruled or turned down because of riding in a driverless car by December 4th, 2029.
As a untrustworthy, sour, and small person, I really respect that this Huang just had the trust of being like, I'm going to play my Game Boy here. Like, I'm going to do whatever. Like, I would never be able to do that. I'm not that guy.
I was also raised to never trust anyone or anything at any time.
DTA. So I don't trust anybody. Yeah. But then they say they're coming out with self-driving robo-taxis. Am I supposed to pay attention then? Like, what am I...
Well, so that's the thing. Are you even going to want to get in one? My philosophy is just don't be the first one.
Right.
Let someone else go first. The second is fine, or maybe even fourth or fifth. RFK Jr.'s staffer claims a New York ballot would help get rid of President Biden. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, Forbes, Politico, CBS, The Democrats, and Real Clear Polling. A Robert F. Kennedy Jr. staff member reportedly told a group of New York Republicans that having the independent presidential candidate on the state's election ballot would reportedly help get rid of Biden. The video shows a self-described Kennedy campaign staff member, Rita Palma, claiming that Trump could only win New York in the 2024 presidential election by having Bobby in the mix as part of a wider strategy to block Biden from winning the presidency. Palma described Biden as the mutual enemy of both RFK Jr. and Trump voters, noting that while she was going to vote for Bobby, she would not be overly upset if Trump won in November. In response to the video, the RFK Jr. campaign stated that Palma was not involved in electoral strategy, noting that the talk was not a campaign event and that the proclaimed New York State director of the Kennedy campaign was speaking as a private citizen. The Democratic National Committee has claimed that the video showed the quiet part out loud, alleging that the RFK Jr. campaign was a spoiler for Donald Trump. According to Real Clear Politics election polling averages, RFK Jr. is currently polling at 11.7% compared to Trump's 41% and President Biden's 35.7%.
Narrative A on this story comes from USA Today. Kennedy's continued presence in the 2024 election race may well put Trump back in the White House. Having been aided by the influence of minor parties in the 2016 election, the former president will benefit not only from Kennedy, but also names such as Jill Stein and Cornel West, who are destined to eat away at Biden's progressive voter bases. Despite the White House's continued optimism, the influence of third-party candidates remains a considerable detriment to Biden's campaign.
Here's Narrative B from the Huffington Post. Although Kennedy's pro-Trump stance has been long suspected, RFK Jr. is certainly not only a danger to President Biden. While Trump was once amicable towards RFK Jr.'s campaign, recent spats against the independent candidate suggest that MAGA Republicans are feeling the heat. There's currently no way to know how a third significant name on the ballot will affect voting in November. Trump is by no means out of the woods.
Establishment critical narrative comes from the Arizona Republic. Kennedy is a candidate admired by disenfranchised Republicans and Democrats alike. And despite the restrictions of America's two-party system, the RFK Jr. campaign has gained traction. The U.S. is destined to continue down the wrong path if either Trump or Biden enters the White House once again. Kennedy has a real opportunity come November to begin America's much-needed healing process.
And here's the nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 1% chance that RFK Jr. will be elected U.S. president in 2024.
Mortar fire kills three Tanzanian soldiers in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Defense Web, Voice of America, The Chanzo, The Citizen, DW, and BBC News. According to the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, three Tanzanian soldiers were killed in a mortar attack in the conflict-ridden Democratic Republic of Congo. The soldiers, part of the SADC's peacekeeping mission to support the DRC's government troops fighting the M23 rebels, died after a hostile mortar round hit near the camp they were staying at. Another three Tanzanians were injured in the attack, and a South African soldier died while being treated for health problems at a hospital in Goma, the capital of the eastern province of North Kivu. The peacekeeping mission suffered its first casualties in February when two South African soldiers were reportedly killed by mortar shells hitting the Mubambaro camp close to the town of Sake in the Goma region. SADC peacekeeping forces were deployed in December 2023 with a mandate to support the DRC government in collective self-defense amid instability and a deteriorating security situation caused by resurgent armed groups in eastern DRC. According to the UN, security continues to deteriorate as M23 rebels are advancing in the country's east. While the DRC, the UN, and some Western countries accuse Rwanda of backing the rebel group, Kigali denies any involvement.
We'll begin the round of spins with a narrative A from Africa News. The growing number of fatalities in this conflict is a grim reminder of Rwanda's illegal presence in the region. In a bid to control the DRC's vast mineral resources, Rwandan President Paul Kagame is pulling the strings by supporting the M23, increasing the risk of a full-scale regional conflict. This situation already ranks as one of the world's most complex humanitarian disasters, which is why Kagame's forces must be removed from the country immediately.
Narrative B comes from the New Times. The global narrative surrounding this conflict ignores the basic failed governance by the DRC. By accusing Rwanda of supporting the M23, Kinshasa is manipulating the international community and distracting attention from its own failure. Besides the M23, some 250 other armed groups are active in the region, with the DRC backing the groups responsible for the 1994 genocide and threatening to invade Rwanda. The conflict can only be resolved if Kinshasa is forced to take responsibility.
And here's the nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 60% chance that the DRC will experience a civil war before 2036. Japanese firms warn AI could collapse social order. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Hill, CNBC, Built In, The Telegraph, and The Wall Street Journal. Nippon Telegraph and Telephone, Japan's largest telecom company, and Yomiuri Shimbun Group Holdings, the country's biggest newspaper, have called for a law to end unrestrained use of artificial intelligence. They warned that democracy and social order could be in peril in the face of unhindered AI development, claiming that AI tools are inaccurate or biased, including AI chatbots that suffer from hallucination and often lie with confidence. The companies on Monday said that unchecked generative AI could also catalyze warfare. AI hallucinations, most commonly associated with AI text generators, occur when AI generates false and misleading information but presents it as fact. They are usually powered by large language models and reportedly rely on probability, not accuracy. Both OpenAI and Google caution users about AI chatbots making mistakes and recommend cross-verification of their outputs. OpenAI has implemented process supervision, while Google takes users' feedback to address the AI hallucination issue. Last year, U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission chairperson Gary Gensler told the Financial Times that AI could roil financial markets as soon as the late 2020s or early 2030s.
CNN brings us narrative A. AI struggles with hallucinations, confidently generating inaccurate information. Despite guardrails, these hallucinations are a challenge as these errors have consequences. A full eradication of the problem may be difficult, and perfect accuracy remains a distant goal. Trust in AI responses must be sparing as there's no immediate fix in sight.
And Bloomberg brings us narrative B. AI errors ought to be viewed as creative experimentation. The focus should be on embracing AI's unpredictable nature rather than aiming for specific outcomes. AI hallucinations could be a concern in fields like finance and healthcare, and ways to leverage them for creative endeavors must be explored for innovative outcomes. Proper context is key to managing this risk.
Narrative C comes from Wired Magazine. AI's chatbot hallucinations act as a buffer requiring human verification before full reliance on AI-generated content. The debate continues on whether these hallucinations can be eliminated entirely. For now, they offer a balance with even some upside, preventing complete automation and maintaining human involvement in critical decision-making processes.
And here are the nerds again from Metaculus saying there's an 81% chance that by June 30, 2025, OpenAI will release an LLM product, or API, that hallucinates 5 times less than GPT-4 did when it was released.
Our final story, Mattel announces a new, more inclusive Scrabble. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by BBC News, The New York Post, Euronews, The Telegraph, and CNN. Toy and game manufacturer Mattel announced it will launch a more inclusive and collaborative version of Scrabble, marking the biggest change in the 75-year history of the board game. The new version, Scrabble Together, will be played on a double-sided board opposite the traditional Scrabble board. Players will be able to choose which version they want to play based on their experience and competitiveness. Scrabble Together will allow players to form teams and use a simpler scoring system compared to the original version. Helper cards will guide players and/or teams, with the objective of being the first competitor to complete 20 challenges without using up the helper cards. Scrabble Together is marketed to those 8 and older, and it differs from Scrabble Junior, which is more like a crossword puzzle. Mattel said in a statement that the new version is the result of research showing that younger players in Britain were less competitive than their older counterparts. Ray Adler, global head of games, said this new game aims to bring people together. Scrabble Together will be rolling out across Europe, but the game will not be available in the U.S. since Mattel doesn't hold the game's license there.
The Guardian brings us a progressive narrative. This is a smart move to bring people together and make the game more appealing and inclusive to a wider pool of prospective players. Those feigning outrage over this are acting like the classic version is being replaced, but it's not. There's nothing wrong with Mattel bringing the fun of Scrabble to those who have been intimidated or simply disinterested in this traditional version.
The Telegraph brings us the conservative narrative. You can add Scrabble to the growing list of board games that are being dumbed down for Gen Z as younger generations continue to suffer from everyone gets a trophy syndrome. Scrabble Together essentially removes the challenging aspects of the game. This wouldn't be a big deal if it weren't a symptom of a greater problem, that young people are averse to anything that's not on a screen or involves competition and any risk of failure.
And the nerds have the final word, with Metaculous Prediction Community saying there's a 50% chance that the woke index in U.S. elite media will top by December 31st, 2024.
I was watching the NFC Championship game this year, the football game, and the 49ers were in it. And I don't like the 49ers, but I'm a Giants fan. The Giants weren't even in the game. And I was rooting against the 49ers. And my son, who's 5 years old, said, "Oh, do you like the other team?" And I said, "No." I said, "So why are you rooting for them?" I said, "Well, I'm rooting against the 49ers because my friend likes them and I don't like them." And he's like, "Why? Like, what are you doing?" And it was like, "Oh, yeah. Why am I doing that?"
What? You got to take a side.
Yeah.
You
know? Why am I rooting against it? Because I would enjoy the fact that my friend's team would lose.
Right.
Like, if only there was a German word for that.
Thank you for listening to the Verity podcast for Wednesday, April 10th, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
To find out more about Verity, visit our website, verity.news, or you can download our app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Melissa Topshire, inviting you to join us next time on Verity.